number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12. Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Purple Project Podcast is back here live in Manhattan, Kansas. Eddie Greer III here living in Manhattan, Kansas. The Purple Project Podcast, folks. It's all about the latest in K-State sports, athletics, what's going on there. We are officially in the month of August, folks. Again, the Purple Project Podcast. Find it wherever you download your podcast. We're on Apple Podcast. If you're on that, please spread the word by leaving us a 5-star rating. That will help the show out tremendously. Spotify, AudioBoomRadio.com. And I just got done finishing the previous 3 episodes of the Purple Project Podcast. So SoundCloud can find that as well, the Purple Project Podcast. It's been a hot one so far, and I believe this is episode, 14. I'll have to go back and check that here in a second, but I want to bring in my co-host here from San Diego, no other than Alex. How you doing on this Monday evening in August? First one in August.
First thing, Eddie. Royals suck again, if you're curious. They were doing okay there for a minute. And since the last episode that we had, they decided that they wanted to pull some old Royal stuff out of the hat. So just cancel the whole season, Eddie. You know what? Fine. My Royals aren't going to be good. Just cancel the whole darn season. I am totally kidding. Don't cancel the season. So I tend to get dead. I am being dramatic. I'm just happy to have baseball back still, to be 100% honest. And NBA, which has been fantastic. I've watched a lot of NBA basketball the last few days, but... today, to continue with the craziness that you mentioned, it's August, but it still doesn't feel like August. It feels like it's March 130th or something like that. It still feels like March and not August, so this weird year continues. And then today, I got notified at work that we'll be working from home the rest of the calendar year, the rest of 2020. So I guess I should continue to get comfy here at my place, because it's going to also be my place of work for the next 5 months at the minimum.
Woo! So,
and I've been here for 4.5 months, so that's gonna be a while. So 2020 is a weird year, man. It is a weird year. We say it every week, but I don't know what else to say on March 130th day.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of NBA basketball myself here the last few days. And yeah, there's been some good stuff going on, and just got done watching Zion put it on the Memphis Grizzlies there a few minutes ago there. So, and then also, yeah, this is episode, and sorry to go off track here, folks. This is episode 13 of the Purple Project Podcast. Already 13 episodes here for the K-State Podcast, so we're quite moving along here, folks. But yeah, a lot of my Braves brothers and sisters are sick to their stomachs. We await the news of Soroka. Before I watched Zion, and I watched Soroka take on the Mets. The Braves were taking on the Mets, trying to sweep them. And he had a rough outing, and he was trying to get to first base. And from the looks of it, it's going to be bad. So. Yeah, I want to just throw away 2020 in a dumpster fire and get on with a new one. But yeah, I'm glad sports are back and they're busy and scheduled. But yeah, this Monday night has been kind of rough on the Braves front. So
Think about it. Is there really a sport that's more cruel than baseball? Baseball. The thing about baseball is everybody thinks, oh, you know, that's just some slow, fun, and easy sport, and you know, how hard could it be? You know, you're throwing a ball, you're hitting a ball, you're catching a ball. I mean, how hard is it? Baseball has to be the most humbling sport of NFL, NBA, MLB. And, you know, I think it's got to be the most humbling sport because I see more freak injuries, number one, in baseball than any other sport. Not that there's not freak injuries in other sports, but I see more freak injuries that just, you're just like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And then, man, I tell you what, I there is no sport where you get more humble pie moments than you do in baseball. Like, when a rookie comes up in baseball, you know, Eddie, that they're going to get some humble pie at some point, and they're going to just go into just the worst drought at some point, no matter how good the rookie is. That's not the same way in NFL or the NBA. Look at Zion, you know? Look at the NFL, and I'll use the Chiefs as an example. Kareem Hunt led the NFL in rushing his rookie year. So, it's, hey, catch the ball, hit the ball. What's so hard about that? Well, I tell you what, baseball has to be, I think baseball is just, you see the freak injuries, you see the humble pie, it messes with your mind more than any other game. And as a fan, it's like a death by a million paper cuts if you have a bad team. Because instead of just like losing four games in the NFL and realizing, oh, I'm not making the playoffs, you know, it's just like a little prick. Every time your team loses, it's just a little prick. Then another injury happens, it's a little prick. Oh, baseball. I'll tell you what, Eddie. It's, yeah. There's my baseball mini moment, in case you're curious. But you probably share this with me right now. You're probably sharing these sentiments that I am saying because you're probably feeling them at this moment.
Well, we were we just reeled off five straight wins prior to that. But there's going to be a lot of question marks now because the pitching. I mean, we had a stacked pitching staff going into the season. And now, with all these opt-outs, these injuries, Cole Hamels, and all this other stuff, now pretty much Soroka's probably going to be done for the year. Alex, double A, not you, but the double A, the owner of the GM for the Braves, he's going to have some work cut out for him here next few days here to see what he can do. We still have a capable roster. And we apologize for going off the deep end here to start the podcast here, but yeah.
Andy,
so.
I just want to give you a little hope that in baseball, and you probably know this, but the trade deadline is August 31st, not the typical July 31st. If it was July 31st, the trade deadline would be like a week after the season started, so that's sort of weird. So it's August 31st, so the Braves do have the ability to go out and pick someone up who you know, can maybe be comparable level if they can, they're willing to trade some prospects or something like that. So, hey, there's still hope that they could go out and they could get a replacement that could at least do a serviceable job in that role.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens, man. But, yeah, we're still waiting on the final analysis as we record this podcast. It's 9:11 Central Time as we get rolling with the Pro Project Podcast. So, yeah, baseball, yep, it's something else. But what, something else, folks? Kate, we were sitting here waiting, the Big 12 messing around. The SEC made a decision late last week that they're going to go to conference play, which means, Alex, we can't play Vanderbilt. We can't get our revenge on Vanderbilt. So now we're sitting around waiting and waiting. What's the Big 12 going to do? What people are asking me, who are we going to play? Who are we going to play? Well, just came in an hour and a half ago. Might as well be official on ESPN. And we talked about on this podcast last week, Alex, Heather Dinich, the ESPN senior writer for college football, got Big 12 finally announced this literally an hour and a half ago, and according to your message to me, Alex, you weren't happy about this. 9 conference games and only 1 non-con.
I didn't want to cut you off there. I hope I didn't do that. But it gets back to what I said a couple episodes ago, and I'll get to that in a second. But first, I just have to say that I saw this coming from a mile away. I think last week when we had our show and we were discussing this, I think you and I were hinting at, you know, we thought that that was the more likely scenario of the scenarios. You know, two conferences have gone that direction. It's kind of a copycat league, and in that way, and it was just hard to, it was kind of hard to see the Big 12, even though the Big 12 wanted to, you know, keep their 12-game schedule, it was still seemed like it was kind of a long shot. For me, when the ACC made their decision, I thought, I was just like, you know, and that happened, what, Wednesday or Thursday of last week is when they made that decision, and I thought, I just don't think that it's going to, that's going to happen. I think that they're going to be to a conference-only schedule.
Right.
And then, oh, by the way, if anybody's wondering, Notre Dame is playing with the ACC, so they averted a crisis.
Yep.
They did. I know we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
What are they going to do with it? And that was honestly my guess. I figured they'd probably pair with the ACC because they play basketball with the ACC. But anyway, getting back to K-State, I figured that the Big 12, that they'd probably be kind of forced to do that. When the SEC came out and made their announcement, we're playing 10 games, all conference games, and then K-State lost Vanderbilt on the schedule, you know, I heard some people saying, you know, well, man, who can K-State replace Vanderbilt with on their non-con? Oh, maybe they should go play BYU. Oh, maybe they should go play Navy again. Oh, you know, go do this. And I was thinking, come on, guys. Like, what do you mean to go? There's no way they're playing their 12-game schedule. No, they're not going to be the only conference to do that. But where it got tricky, Eddie, was that a lot of these conferences could say, you know what, we're going to play our conference-only schedule, and we're going to make it 10 games. Because all these conferences have at least 12 teams. But the Big 12 doesn't. The Big 12 only has 9 teams. So the Big 12 couldn't have a 10-game schedule. They could only have a 9-game schedule. And then they're like, okay, well, how the heck is that going to work? So then I heard kind of some rumors over the weekend on, you know, well, you know, what's the Big 12 going to do? Are they just going to play 9? Maybe will they cut it down to 8? Will they maybe play one team twice? Although that doesn't really seem fair. And then the puzzle just wasn't really working. So I guess the most logical thing happened. You know, that the Big 12 approved today. You're going to play 9 teams. And then you are going to have the one non-con game, which, according to Kellis Robinette on Twitter about an hour and a half ago, Buffalo and North Dakota both are still very interested in playing K-State.
So that's right, yep.
My guess would be that one of those two teams will be the team that K-State plays. And, you know, fortunately for K-State, there's two teams that are like, we do still want to play you. So that puts K-State at least in a good situation for that one non-con game. But I think more than anything, Eddie, the Big 12 didn't really have a choice. You know, when all those Power 5 conferences are canceled, for starters, a lot of the Big 12 non-con games got thrown out of whack because there were a lot of Big 12, we touched on this a few episodes ago, there were a lot of Big 12 non-con games against Power 5 schools, and so a lot of teams already had their non-cons designated because they're like, well, that team's not even playing a non-con, so we can't do that, so what, we only have one game on our non-con that we can still play. We only have two games on our non-con that we can still play. There weren't very many teams in the Big 12 who had all three of their non-con games that they could still play.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have had to do this last work, kind of like, you know, patch a non-con schedule together or do something, and it would have been confusing and chaotic, and it would have been difficult. So I don't think the Big 12 had much of a choice. And I think that they knew they had to get to 10. So, you know, hey, let's play the one non-con game. My overall gripe it stems back to what I said a couple episodes ago. I don't understand what the difference between 10 games and 12 games is. It's two games. It's two games. What? Like, why are all these conferences bending over backwards over two football games? You're like, you're saying this. Well, you know, we're willing to play 10 games. Well, we're willing to play a bowl game. Well, we're willing to play a conference championship, but oh, no, no, no. Oh, we cannot play that first game in September. Oh, no, no, no. You know what can happen if we play that last game in August? It's like, what? Like, is it going to really be any more dangerous than when K-State, you know, has to go play a team in December? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me, the thought process from all these conferences saying, you know, oh, this is safer. Oh, you know, it's safer playing three less games. I mean, Eddie, that would be the equivalent of my work. Instead of them coming to me today and saying, you're going to work from home the rest of the year, they would come to me and say, you know what, we care about your safety. We care about it a lot. So here's what we're going to do. You are going to come into the office. Instead of coming in 5 days a week, you're only going to come in four. Congratulations. We are reducing your risk of the coronavirus. No. If I go into the office 4 days a week compared to 5 days a week, Eddie, it's the same darn thing. I mean, what? That doesn't make any sense. Mm. You know? It just doesn't... Like, I don't understand what that accomplishes. And maybe I'm missing something, but I just don't get what that helps. Especially when you look at it to where some of these teams, instead of saying, you know... I understand some conferences who have maybe been like, you know, we're only going to play an 8-game schedule. We're going to get rid of our 4 non-con games. And, you know, that makes a little more sense, okay? You know, we're cutting 4 games off the schedule. I mean, that's a quarter of the schedule and or no, that's a third of the schedule, actually. And,
yes, third, yep.
So that makes a little more sense to me because it's a significant chunk of games. It shows me a little more that you are legitimately doing it for safety. But 2 games, I just don't get it. I just don't, 2 games... I just don't get it, Eddie. I really don't understand how that is any safer than not. And I also, so the Big 12 and the SEC, it just doesn't make sense. It's just 10 games instead of 12 just doesn't make sense. Especially when you're like, oh, but we are going to play the conference championship. And oh, we are going to play bowl games. And I'm just like, I don't know. I don't know, Eddie. Maybe you can help me with this, but I'm kind of having trouble wrapping my head around that particular aspect of this.
Yeah, so am I a little bit. But I caught this conversation on the game on the way to pick some groceries up. John Kurtz hosted the game with Mason Bowles, who has hot takes all over the place, and Mitch Fortner. Yeah, so more on that later in the show. I got something for you, Alex. But yeah, I'm trying to figure that out. But yeah, and going back to what I was going to say about Kurtz, they're on the discussion about the Big 12 and the whole conference issue, and John Kurtz brought up something that I think we've been talking about since the Pro Project podcast got started, all about this money deal. And I don't know, I still don't understand what the big Bob Bowlesby and the whole Big 12 committee were waiting on SEC for. I didn't understand that. And before this announcement, I was going to call Big 12 out saying, what are you waiting on? I mean, everybody else made their decision, and here we are, Alex, in August, and they had no damn decision made. And then literally, before we go on the show, the announcement was made. So... yeah, I think the Big 12 put themselves in a box there.
You know what I wonder, Eddie? What I wonder is, what if the Big 12 came out before the SEC and they said, we're playing 12 games, period. We're playing our 12 games. Would that have changed what the SEC did? Because we know that the SEC did want to play 12. But the Big 12 was like, you know what? No, we're going to sit. We're going to wait. We're going to see what everyone does, and then we're going to figure out what they're going to do. And the SEC was sitting there saying, okay, well, these other three did it, so, I mean, we're not going to be the ones to say, you know, we're playing our full schedule. You know, but they wanted to do that. I mean, that is what they initially wanted to do.
Yeah.
I just wonder if the Big 12 really wanted to play 12 games, why they didn't, you know, if they came out and they said, you know, we're playing 12. That's what we're doing. We're playing our full schedule. Final decision. I'm just curious if the SEC would have come out and said the same thing instead of done the 10 games, because I know that they wanted to play a full schedule.
I mean,
and I feel like if the Big 12 would have done that, I really feel like the SEC might have done that as well, because like I said, this is kind of a copycat league. So if the Big 12 did it, the SEC wouldn't feel so guilty for saying we want to play a full schedule.
Yeah, and the SEC has all those teams, 14, 15, I believe, and obviously the Big 12 only has 10. Well, yeah, 10 teams in there, so I don't know why they're I think the Big 12 was probably holding back some. I mean, yeah, I understand we're in a pandemic right now, and still going to be in that pandemic. I mean, look at baseball right now with the Phillies, Marlins not playing because a whole bunch of people getting testing positive for Corona and missing out on all these games. So, I mean, I'm still a little puzzled. But yeah, it might have been, is it a money issue? Or, I mean, we've discussed this a bunch on this podcast that COVID-19 has affected everybody in whatever way, shape, or form, whether it's in sports, whether it's in your work. Like you said, you had to stay home now the rest of the year, and I'm still going out doing what I'm doing, talking to clients and delivering clients from all over the middle of Kansas. So I've been pretty fortunate pretty blessed about that, but in the middle of this unfortunate pandemic that we're all in. So yeah, I mean, I wish they would have made their decision a lot sooner. Maybe the SEC would have stuck with the Big 12 there and go ahead and play. Well, you have all those teams in the SEC, including Missouri and A&M and all those other teams over there. So, yeah, I mean, you're missing out on these games. And the kind of thing, we've touched it already in the Purple Project podcast, kind of to cover it again, focus on the Big 12, these marquee matchups. West Virginia was supposed to play Florida State. That ain't happening. Baylor was supposed to play Ole Miss. They ain't happening. Oklahoma, Tennessee. That's not happening. And Texas, LSU, the big marquee match from last year. That's not happening. In the anticipated rematch in Baton Rouge. That ain't happening. Obviously, I touched on early here in K-State, Manhattan. Looking forward to playing Vanderbilt here in the Little Apple. Wanting to get our revenge from a couple years ago. That's not going to happen. So that, and including on the money, that's all that money we're talking about. That's money lost right there.
And Eddie, this is what gets me when you just listed off all this, some of the top knock-on games in the Big 12 this year. All but one that you just listed was a Big 12 versus SEC matchup. And that's what makes me scratch my head even more. That's what makes me scratch my head even more. You figure the Big 12 and SEC, they go up against each other. That's going to make you money. That's going to make you more money than if you go up against a non-Power 5 school. So if K-State going up against Vanderbilt, Texas going up against LSU, that's going to make a ton of money, even if there's not fans in the stands. Just on the TV, deal right there. And you look at, I believe you said it was Baylor Ole Miss?
Yep. Was that the one? Yes, sir. Yep. Baylor Ole Miss. Yeah.
And these are games, Eddie, that are going to, are going to make a nice little amount of money. And we talked about the money and how, it's hard. You got to get all the money you can get. Well, playing more games would get you more money. And if you are talking about all this money you could lose, and why are you willing to trim off a non-con and then just play conference games? I mean, that just confuses me for the whole money aspect. And then the Big 12 sitting back just didn't make any sense, because it's almost like the Big 12 and the SEC are like, well, we both want the same thing, but oh, it's not a popular take, so I don't want to say it. Well, I don't want to say it. When you say it, I don't want to say it. You said it. Well, now I'll say it. It just didn't make sense. And if they're really concerned about the health and safety, and I hate saying this as a sports fan who has been very vocal about how I believe sports should be played through this pandemic, because I believe that it's clear that this is not going to go away, and we have to learn to live with the coronavirus in some way, shape, or form. We've got to, if it's going to be here until there's a vaccine and a cure. And so I am a person that says that we got to find a way to live with it. we got to find a way to bring sports back because you can't have them away for that, for all that time. But if college football in particular is that concerned about this not working, then what's the point of playing? I mean, seriously, I mean, when you think of it from that perspective, what's the point of playing? You know, I don't understand the one foot in, one foot out. If you're legitimately concerned about their health and safety, then cancel the season. Have the nerve, or have the kahunas to cancel the season if you're legitimately concerned about that. But if you think it can be done, then play the season. And if you look back at the MLB and NBA, those seasons aren't shortened because of safety concerns. Those seasons were, I mean, safety concerns were a part of it, but those deals, the NBA Players Association and the NBA had to negotiate a deal. In the MLB, the MLB Players Association, they had to negotiate a deal. And that is what delayed those seasons from starting, was the fact that those deals had to get negotiated. This isn't deals getting negotiated. This is I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to play 12 games, so let's just play 9 for safety. Like, it's just, it doesn't make sense. And you look over at the NFL, and I understand the NFL isn't, there's not quite as many layers to the NFL as there is college because of, you know, the campus aspect of it. But you don't see the NFL saying, well, maybe we need to cut our schedule from 16 to 13. I mean, no, the NFL has never even hinted at anything like that. I mean, they've been very vocal about we're playing 16 games and we're going to try to play a season.
At least not yet, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but at the moment, while the NFL is not threatened by the coronavirus, if the coronavirus does end up having an impact on the NFL, obviously that can change.
Yeah.
But with the NCAA, it's the same thing. I mean, these conferences are making this decision before anything has happened. Yes, some schools have had to cancel workouts because of positive tests, but those have not impacted the season, and it's just, it just loops back to, if you're concerned about the health and safety of the athletes, then just cancel the season. And if you legitimately don't think it can get played safely, because right now the message that I'm getting in college is a lot of indecision. It just seems like a lot of indecision on the part of these conference commissioners on how to proceed with this season. And I can tell you this, Eddie, if you get caught with one foot in and one foot out, these conferences are going to get caught with their pants pulled down halfway through this season, and you know what I mean? They're gonna, and then they're not gonna be able to finish the season. So they've got to come up with concrete plans and be able to follow them and have the nerve and conviction. I mean, heck, Rob Manfred's coming out right now saying, you know what? We trust our process. I'm not a quitter, and we're gonna make this work in the MLB. The NCAA does not have that conviction. I'm not the biggest Rob Manfred fan, by the way, but I'm just saying, the NCAA doesn't have that conviction to make a decision and stick with it. There's a lot of this waiting around. Well, we'll cut a couple games here. Maybe we'll move a date back here. Well, we're trying to, you know, micromanage before we even know anything that happens. And, you know, I'm not terribly confident that the NCAA is going to be able to handle an outbreak if one happens. And they're just not giving me confidence, Eddie. They're just not giving me confidence that this season is going to be played properly with the way this has been handled in the offseason. Because right now, it just doesn't make sense that there's only 10 games to me. If you're legit concerned about the safety, cancel the season. Hate saying that as a sports fan, but cancel the season if you're legit concerned about their safety. And if you think the season can get played, have a 12-game season, your full season, and have contingency plans in place for if scenario A, B, C, D, and E happen. And that is just not something that they've done.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Oh, man. Episode 13 of the Purple Project Podcast. Eddie Gritter III, Alex Eden, K-State grads / Wildcat 91.9 alums. Yeah. Man, you're on a roll, man. But yeah. Man, yeah, I mean, the MLB, they have a plan, and even though with the whole the Marlins situation and the Phillies and now the Cardinals, and they still sticking to their plan, so I mean, oh yeah, that's what's going to say. So okay, so what the difference is with the NCAA and Major League Baseball, NFL, and the rest of the sports that you're dealing with, and I might not be helping with your take here, but you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old kids out there.
Yep,
I mean,
you are
out there playing. So yep. I mean, here in Manhattan. One of the reasons why the numbers of COVID spiked up because of people that went to Aggieville partying up, they were ages, the popular age, 18 to 24. So you're talking about, so, I mean, that's another thing too, that these young, how are these young kids, young boys, girls, whatever you want to call it, whatever it is, student athletes, men and women, have to deal with it. And that's what I'm talking about. One of my running buddies mentioned this, I think Saturday after our the race, not NASCAR, but running, he mentioned to me that, he was very frightened that, okay, the student union is opening back up. It was supposed to open back up today. So it did. But he was worried if you open all these sections of K-State back up, what if a outbreak happens or whatnot? How does K-State here locally going to handle that? I have no idea to answer that question. That's the same thing with football. Okay, so K-State, we already know what happened a couple months ago. They were hit with COVID after testing. A couple days later, bam, bam, bam. You have all these tests. And then LSU had the same thing. Now you get into the season here. We don't even know when the season's supposed to start. Still, and let me go ahead and throw this in here real fast. Let me switch my page here for a second. I had it up here. Okay, so the Big 12 Championship, you mentioned it, Alex. They still don't have an official date. They want, with the flexibility of the shortened season, we'll call it that because we're not playing a full season. We're playing a 10-game season now. Championship game is either scheduled for December 12th or the 19th. So, all right. So, what if you get into the season and you have what? The Marlins, Phillies, Cardinals, or what? Dealing with one of these teams, K-State, Texas, Oklahoma, something like that, and you can't play the game. So,
And Eddie, that's something that, you know, I have thought about that particular scenario for all sports, to be 100% honest, is, you know, what if there's a positive test of, of course, this is going to be my example, which is going to shock everybody, I'm sure. What if Patrick Mahomes gets, you know, test positive for the coronavirus the day before the Super Bowl? Did they sell the Super Bowl now, Patrick Mahomes? Would they really do that? If the MLB is playing and the Dodgers have an outbreak right after game one of the World Series, do the Dodgers really just lose the World Series? I think that is a great point that you bring up. And, you know, the Big 12 actually did do it. Nice thing. They're giving themselves a little flexibility, I think, for that particular scenario in case it happens. With that said, you bring up a good point about the 18 to 22 year olds, and it is 100% valid. And quite frankly, you bring up things that I don't have answers to. And my response to you, Eddie, would be, you know what, Eddie? There's people that are paid more than me to figure out how to make them. I don't have the answers, but
I don't have the answers. Yeah.
Because I'm not an expert on that. Honestly, if they don't think it can be done safe, as I told you, then there shouldn't be a season. And it absolutely kills me to say that because I do believe there should be a college football season. I believe they should take every measure possible to have a college football season. And if there is proof out there, statistical evidence that this 10-game season is going to give us a better chance at getting a season in and keeping the athletes safe.
Bam.
And it's been great. Awesome. I'm 100% on board. But I haven't seen that. I haven't seen anything showing that. And if you're just going on like a hunch that, you know, we want to protect the players, I just, or you protect these student athletes, it doesn't make sense because you're still putting them out there for 10 games. And there's a lot of games. That's a lot of football games. And so if you're legitimately concerned about it, then put them out for that. But if you're canceling games and you're not that concerned about it, well, that just is stupid because you're losing money. You're losing money. So I can't figure out that middle ground. I understand that they're trying to find a way to make it work, but I think the biggest thing, Eddie, is that they haven't really given us any evidence or any statistical proof. Like the NFL, they have a chief medical officer that is helping set all that stuff up. So when the NFL makes a decision, that chief medical officer is having, you know, a good amount of input on the decision that's being made. And, you know, the NCAA may have, you know, medical officers and things like that, that are helping make these decisions, but they're not being very vocal and transparent about it if they are. Because from where I sit, it just seems like they're kind of, you know, doing things on a whim because other conferences did it because of their scenario. I told you at the get-go, the Pac-12 made sense. There's a huge outbreak in the South, and there's a lot of schools in the Pac-12 that are in cities and states that are being hit really hard. USC, UCLA, Arizona, Arizona State. There's four right there that are in some of the hardest hit areas. So I understand if they say, you know what, we want to cancel our first three games, we want to push the season back, and we want to give it a chance to calm down in those areas because there's just too much infection right now in those areas. That makes sense. That makes sense. You look at the Big 12, though, and it's just not the same case. The SEC has a much better case about that than the Big 12 does because the SEC is in some states that are seeing more outbreaks than the Big 12. So, I mean, SEC could use that type of argument. But the Big 12, I don't know, Eddie. It just doesn't. The dots don't all connect, you know. If you're playing that connect the dots game, and all the dots are supposed to connect at the end, and you're like, "Oh, I won." I can't get the dots to connect, Eddie. I just can't get it.
Yeah. So, if you just joined the podcast, Big 12 just announced 2 hours now ago that Big 12, instead of playing the full 12 games, wasting our time, all that waiting for, I mean, yeah, we saw this coming, though. We saw it coming, knew it, because all the conferences already made a decision, and Big 12 was waiting around like something, like you waiting for a batter to hit somebody in the outfield. So they finally made a decision to go with the conference play, 9 games, and the plus one, non-con, so...
Mm-hmm. And I do want to say quickly, it's not that them waiting, and I know you and I have shared a little differing opinions on this take, but it's not that them waiting it has been an issue with me. I've been fine with the Big 12 saying, you know what, hey, you know, we want to wait till the end of July to see, because we don't need to make a decision early July. So let's see what happens the rest of the month, and then let's make an educated decision then, instead of make a decision on July 8th or whatever it was when the Big Ten made it, and the season's still, you know, two months out. You know, so let's just wait and see what happens. I was 100% for that. You know, let's not make a knee-jerk reaction, Big 12. Let's kind of see how things play out, and let's reevaluate and make a decision at the beginning of August. But once these conferences started to kind of do all this and the jostling started to happen, it seemed like that timetable kind of got pushed up, so to speak. And it was it's time to make a decision. And heck, last week of July would have been fine, Eddie. I would have been fine if they made a decision last week of July. Honestly, it felt like it was a week late to me. Just my personal opinion. It felt like it was like a week late decision from the Big 12. because what ended up happening, as I said at the very beginning of this podcast, the Big 12 was really left with no choice because everybody...
We're playing
just conference games. The Big 12 non-con games were already... It already looks like Swiss cheese because of all the holes that were missing from the non-con games because all the Power 5 games were gone because they had all been canceled. So the Big 12's best bet if they wanted to play a 12-game season, which I believe they did, would have been, as I told you, after the ACC made their decision to just play conference, come out, say we're playing the full season, and see if the SEC would have followed. Because you knew the SEC did want to play that, and maybe they would have come out, and you could have found a way to make it work. But just to get a couple notes in, for people who are wondering, I still don't know the date of the non-con game. So we don't know when K-State's home opener will be. That's still to be determined. And every Big 12 team's non-con game has to be a home game. So nobody can go on the road. And that makes sense. I do understand the Big 12 saying, you've got to stay home. We don't want you traveling. Let's limit the amount of travel. That does make sense. I get that 100%. We just have to wait and see who everybody plays for their one game and when the season's going to begin.
Yeah, and so that non-con game has yet to be determined, like Alex said. Buffalo and North Dakota State, right?
I believe it's North Dakota. I hope it's not North Dakota State, because that would be a little sad.
Yeah, my bad. Yeah, it's my fault. Yeah, it's North Dakota. My bad. North Dakota. So Buffalo and North Dakota still in play, even though both teams are still interested, that they both want to play K-State. And again, that's that money we're talking about all summer long on the Purple Project podcast. So we'll see who that opponent is. And we already know the 9 opponents, obviously, from the Big 12. So, yep. Interesting stuff there. Man, we talked about that for 40 minutes. Good discussion, though. So, I like to move on to something that came up on the radar also while I was on a drive to get groceries and catch up on this a little bit on it now. So, the Lockett family, man, they have made an impact here in Manhattan and, of course, K-State. Well, Coach Kleiman and Taylor Bratt, one of the specialists for the recruiting for K-State, gave Sterling Lockett, folks, an offer to play at K-State. And then he would be a part. And actually, I'm reading this right now, right in front of me. Lockett, I'm going to just say Sterling Lockett, is one of the elite prospects in this state, Kansas, and considered by many as a top wide receiver prospect for the 2022 class. You're talking about not 2021. You're talking about the following year, 2022 class. We all know the Lockets have had a huge impact, not just for this university, but for this community. Tyler Lockett making things happen with the Seattle Seahawks. And I got something on him here that I heard on the game here for you, Alex, here coming up. But, But Alex, your thoughts on another, and this has been actually, even my wife was telling me about this. She and everyone else, you know, there's possibly going to be another Lockett coming to K-State. Well, here you go, folks. Sterling Lockett, right up there in the alley, folks, for a possible commit. I know it's a little way early right now, way too early a little bit, but 2022 class, folks. Sterling Lockett, folks. Look out.
Yeah, so I saw him, I saw his announcement on Twitter that he had been offered a scholarship at K-State, and obviously I was excited about that because K-State's 3-for-3 on the Lockett experiment in their past with Aaron Lockett to Kevin Lockett to Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Tyler Lockett being in my grade, he came in my freshman year. We were seniors together as well. I actually had a many classes with Tyler Lockett. So yeah, that's right. That's right. Got to spend some time with him in the classroom, Eddie. But no, I got to watch him. I wasn't lying about that. Yes, I actually did spend a lot of classes with him. But what I was really going to say was I got to watch him for 4 years in person. Nearly every game, and he was just such a special talent. And, you know, I watched Kevin Lockett and Aaron Lockett on TV, and they were special players. And Kevin Lockett obviously went on and had a really good NFL career as well. And Tyler is now going on and having a really good NFL career. Shout out to Tyler Lockett, by the way, for being, I think it was number 64 on the NFL Top 100.
65.
I was off by one. 65, so shout out to Tyler Lockett for that. K-State represent. Love it. I love it. That list was horrible this year, but I love it. But so obviously, you know, I was super excited about it. And now I guess I can say Kansas City represent because he goes to Blue Valley. I didn't know he went to Blue Valley, Eddie. That was a total shock to me. I was like, huh, interesting, okay. I guess they moved to Kansas City. I'm really excited, obviously, about the news. He didn't commit. So everybody was like, oh, did he commit? No, he received an offer. Hopefully he'll commit. Fingers crossed. I've heard things about him too, Eddie. I've heard things about him in the pipe for years now, ever since Tyler was there. That, you know, there's another Lockett.
Yeah, yep. Same thing.
He could be the best Lockett yet. And I was like, you know what? And everybody was saying that about Tyler Lockett too. You know, this new, when I was my freshman year, everybody's like, this new Lockett, I mean, you know, he could be better than Kevin Lockett. He could be better than his dad. And I'm like, well, his dad was really good. I'm like, really? Yes, he was Tyler's. I think Tyler is very good. I don't know if I could, you know, if he's better than Kevin Lockett or not, but he's a sure special talent. So it runs in the family, and you know, K-State is an integral part of that Lockett family. So, you know, hopefully Sterling Lockett will come to K-State and do things that Aaron, Kevin, and Tyler did at K-State. And if that's the case, Chris Klieman's going to be a very happy coach, because he's going to have a weapon that he can use in many different ways out there. Tyler, I know Tyler tweeted something about it. He was really excited about that news. And you know, Sterling may not have a choice. Tyler and Kevin may just say, look, you're going, okay? Yeah, look, mm-hmm. That's part of the family. It's family tradition. You go to K-State, okay? So get on over there and have a good time. But no, it's great news. Great news to see it. And hopefully in a couple years we get to see him in the purple and silver.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
EG3 here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden, San Diego, California. Purple Project continues. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with Sterling. And you made a point about number 65. We're getting to that right now with Tyler Lockett being in the top 100 players, number 65. And all right, so I've heard from a couple of podcast, I think it was Tim Fitzgerald's podcast, the Go Powercat podcast. Listen to an old episode, one of the guys, I'm not going to call out his name, but one of the guys said that Tyler Lockett wasn't the best receiver at K-State. And then on the game today, I heard that Mason Both, the hot take person, he was very outspoken. He said that and he's a big Dallas Cowboys fan and all this other stuff. So, but he said Amari Cooper is better than Tyler Lockett. So last year, just looking at last year's stats here that I got up here for the Seahawks, and WR1 Lockett, 82 catches, over 1,000 yards receiving, 1,057 to be exact, 8 touchdown passes. You go the year before that, 57 catches, 965 yards, 10 touchdowns. So for the first time in his career last year, he cracked over 1,000 yards there. So I find that the comment that one of the guys made on the Go Powercat podcast, I was baffled by that comment there. Who else are you going to think of at wide receiver? At least for me, from Georgia and Florida moving up here for school, all I know was, okay, so there's Ty Lockett. Who else was better? I don't know. I don't see it. I mean, yeah, you have Chris Harper or some of these other guys that didn't really make an impact really because of the style of offense that Bill Snyder and Dana Dimmel were doing. I mean, they were just sticking to the plan of where they wanted to run the football. So, okay, so you bring in, and I've seen Ty Lockett. I was fortunate enough to call some of his games for the Wildcat 91.9, and that obviously, we both seen it, dynamic player. So I don't see somebody else now, maybe Aaron Lockett, maybe, but Ty Lockett is by far, well, I think the best wide receiver, at least for me, and this is my opinion, since I've been up here in the state of Kansas, and also I scoffed it at, I mean, yeah, Amari Cooper, Ty Lockett, I mean, Cooper, he's dropped some easy passes over the last couple years. If you're going to be a number one wide receiver, you got to make those catches. And I don't see Amari Cooper on ESPN or NFL Network highlight reels. I see Tyler Lockett making plays on so, I mean, sorry going on a little tangent here, but that just kind of bothered me a little bit. I mean, are you going to put Chris Harper over Tyler Lockett? You're going to put, I can't even remember other receivers. I mean, you're talking, are you going to put Malik Knowles over Tyler Lockett? Knowles has been injury prone. So I just can't think of anybody else, at least for my opinion, since I've been up here in 2010 in Manhattan, specifically going to school at K-State and graduating K-State. So I put Lockett as the more receiver out of K-State unless proven otherwise. I mean, unless Malik Knowles or Joshua Youngblood comes up and steps up and gets targets from Skylar Thompson, unless Skylar Thompson get the ball out. We talked about that already in this podcast. So that's kind of a little bit of a rant that I want to get off is that Ty Lockett has been huge, not only for K-State, but for the Seahawks. Also, Russell Wilson trusts him with his life, and that's why he's in the WR1, and he's taking that spot over up there and making himself known up there. So, yeah, I just can't see, for me, I just can't see, you know, who's better than Ty Lockett wide receiver-wise. Tight ends are better? Hell no. I definitely don't see that. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely scratched my head at the Cooper Lock comparison there earlier. So, yeah, I mean, Alex, what you got?
Yeah, I'm actually looking right now at some stats because you started talking about that and while I can't give you every stat on Tyler Lockett. And K-State's stat, he established the K-State's school record for single-game receiving yards, and then he broke his own record for K-State single-game receiving yards. So he set the record, and then he broke his own record. So he was top two there, and then he set the single-game all-purpose yards, and career kickoff return yards, granted that's technically not receiving, but still. And that was all even more before his huge senior year. So I'm with you. I'm trying to think back on K-State receivers and if there's anyone who I have seen on that level in my lifetime of and I'm with you, Eddie. I think back of the Michael Bishop days, the L. Roberson days, and the L. Roberson days, Darren Sproles was their biggest factor, biggest winner. Their second most known was Terrence Newman, who played defense, as we all know, cornerback. And so you're like, okay, no one I can think of there. And then there's no one past L. Roberson in the years, because K-State had that little drop-off, and there wasn't really any receiver in that time frame, and no one that's current is on Tyler Lockett's level. I know that, because I've watched enough lately. So then I'm thinking back, and I'm like, maybe the Michael Bishop years, and and the Beasley and the Beasley years, but I can't think of anything either. So I'm with you, Eddie. Chris Harper was a good receiver for K-State. He was a very talented receiver. He was great at running those little, we talk about those little short slants. He was fantastic at those little like five yard slants.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Oh yeah. He could do a lot of damage in those types of plays. And that wasn't necessarily Tyler's strength. And Chris Harper was technically the number one receiver his senior year, Tyler's sophomore year. But I think it's also important to keep in mind that it was Chris Harper's senior year and Tyler Lockett's sophomore year. And he was injured his freshman year with a lacerated kidney.
Yep, I remember.
So he had to come back from the injury. And he still had a great sophomore year. But I think more than anything, I think Chris Harper was the number one guy because of his seniority. He was a good receiver. He went to the NFL. Well, Chris Harper, he made a brief stint in the NFL. Very brief, short
career.
Yes, very, very, very short career. But he was a good receiver, but he's not at Tyler Lockett's level. I mean, Tyler Lockett, you know, his level's unmatched. And just a fun fact, too, for people, he almost transferred at the end of his freshman year. Tyler actually opened up and talked about that a lot his senior year. I had a whole segment, actually, I remember on my show, Wildcat World of Sports, about that when Tyler opened up about it. And it was right around when he actually had that injury, and he had a couple-game bunk, and he just felt like he was maybe being called to go a different direction. And he ultimately did not ended up not leaving K-State, thank goodness, and ended up doing what he did. But no, I can't think of anybody who's better than him. So no, I mean Kevin Lockett was good, and yeah, you can make an argument with Kevin and Aaron. But aside from the Locketts, I don't know if there's anybody else who can make that argument with two receiver at K State. Now, with flipping to the Amari Cooper part. You know, Amari Cooper is tricky. He's tricky to figure out. You know, Eddie, he can have one game where he balls out and he has 200 yards and you're like, oh my gosh, this is the Amari Cooper that we saw in college that everybody said is just going to be this amazing stud receiver. And then you see him in games and he just doesn't even try, it seems like. He just gives up. You know, I have two games that stick in my head from last year, three actually, that stick in my head from last year where he just kind of threw the towel in, it felt like. It wasn't even trying. It was when they were at Chicago, they were at New England, and they were at Philadelphia. He was not good at all in any of those games. And those were three of their biggest games. They needed to win those games to get to the playoffs. Yeah, he showed up against the Washington Redskins and had a huge game. Congratulations. You showed up against the 3-win Washington Redskins. What do you want? I mean, you know, Tyler Lockett, he is a special player. And I remember when the Chiefs went to play Seattle, it would have been Mahomes' first year starting. So it was the year that the Chiefs made the AFC championship and lost to the Patriots in overtime. But they went up to Seattle in that game. And that was the first time that my team had gone up against Tyler Lockett. And I think that was when I had the moment, Eddie, in my head where I was like, you know what? Man, Tyler Lockett's annoying. Oh my gosh. Like, the defense was perfect on him. And somehow Russell Wilson still was able to drop a dime in to Tyler. And it felt like that kept happening over and over again. Mm-hmm. And he's so pesky. And I gained even more appreciation for him when I was when he wasn't on my team. And I learned just how hard it is to defend him. To be 100% honest. Does Amari Cooper have the higher ceiling? Yes. I think that you can say that Amari Cooper has the higher ceiling, and when he's on, he's any receiver in the NFL. The problem with Amari Cooper is he's not there every game. You know, he's not there, and he just doesn't show up, and he's not consistent. You know, he's got those amazing games here, but then no receptions the next game. I mean, that just can't happen. And I've had Tyler Lockett in fantasy a couple years, Eddie, and he doesn't have any zero reception games. Okay, the worst that you usually see from Tyler Lockett's maybe 3 receptions, 20 yards, or 2 receptions, 40 yards, or something like that. I mean, you know, you're not going to get a zero catches from Tyler Lockett. It just doesn't happen. He finds a way to get himself open. He makes great plays, and he makes highlight plays. You're right. He had one of the best catches in the NFL last year. It was against the St. Louis Rams or San Francisco 49ers. I forget who, but it was on a primetime game. And Russell Wilson just dropped a dime in it. I still to this day don't know how he got his feet in. But it was an amazing catch in the corner of the end zone. There were like 3 guys around him. And look, the throw from Russell Wilson was just just insane. But Tyler made an amazing play to get that in. He has such a feel in the back of the end zone to be able to get those 2 feet in. And he's just like a surgeon, you know, with a surgical knife. Just the way he's able to maneuver in the end zone and make plays so crafty. Crafty is probably the best word to use. Yes, Amari's Cooper may have the higher ceiling, but the consistency isn't there, in my opinion. And you know, I know if it was my team, you know, if someone said, "Hey, Alex, you would rather have Amari Cooper or Tyler Lockett on the Chiefs?" I would take Tyler Lockett. I mean, I'd just be 100% honest. I would, you know, I would want a receiver who, yeah, Tyler Lockett may not have the ceiling of Amari, and you know, he may not go off for 200, but I know what I'm going to get from Tyler. You know, he's got good hands, he runs good routes, and he has speed to make explosive plays and make plays that will flip the game.
Yeah. And
that is so dynamic, and that's another thing that he has. He has that speed, he has that burst, he can break a play open. Along with running great routes and having great hands and having his head in the right mindset all the time. So, you know, give me Tyler Lockett. I'm also biased. So, a majority of people may say, "Alex, what are you talking about? You're crazy. You really take over Amari." But yeah, I just don't want to have, you know, I just don't understand how you can be considered one of the best when you have 4, 5, 6 games in a season where you just don't show up at all. And, you know, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, going back to my work analogy, Eddie, I don't get to work in the morning, or now, I guess, virtually, and say, "You know what, guys? I'm not going to show up to any meetings today. You know, I have the report to write today, but, I'm just not digging it. I'll get to it next week." No, I can't do that. You can't do that, Eddie. It's not the way it works. So, you know, it's just, I don't understand why, you know, Amari would be rewarded for that. So, I don't know where he came, by the way, on the NFL Top 100. I'm not sure where he came out on that list, but either way, give me Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, so, and probably going to save this for next week's podcast, but before we go in quickly here for to wrap the show, we're going to talk 100 players here for a second, but yep, Jordy Nelson, so who's walking at K-State. I was sitting here thinking about it. I was like, oh goodness, I do not want to be crucified if I did not bring up his name. So that's something to kind of think about there. Jordy Nelson had a huge impact, and this was during the Ron Prince years that I was not here for, so yeah, so Jordy Nelson is not playing in the NFL anymore. He retired. But obviously, he made a huge impact with the Packers, obviously winning Super Bowl with the Packers against the Steelers there. So you can make a great debate. I mean, we can discuss this further next week. But yeah, just something to think about there. Jordy Nelson, Tyler Lockett, they're made great impacts around this community and on the football field as well. So think about that, folks.
So apologize. I have to apologize to K-State fan base for forgetting Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
That's excusable. as inexcusable on my part to forget Jordy Nelson. With that said, I still think Tyler Lockett is the best. Jordy was great. Jordy was fantastic, but I just Tyler, in my opinion, made more of an impact in his time at K-State than Jordy did. And I know that Tyler holds a decent amount of the receiving records at K-State, so I still will take Tyler over Jordy for those reasons. But I still have to apologize for K-State Nation for just glossing over Jordy Nelson.
Apologize. Yeah.
Over the Prince years, I didn't even think about that. But, you know, you don't want to think about the Prince years. You know, Jordy was the only good thing going on in the Prince years. So, you know, I was just kind of like, well, no, K-State wasn't good during that time. Why would I be anywhere? But yes, Jordy was fantastic receiver. Had a great, great moments at K-State. Great moments, obviously, with the Packers. Had an amazing NFL career. Can't believe I forgot that one, Eddie. Can't believe I forgot that one.
Yeah, apologize, K-State Nation. But I'm glad I wasn't here for the Ron Prince years. That's another conversation. I'm going to move on from that to wrap up this podcast here. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex Aiden out there, out west, San Diego, California. This is the Purple Project Podcast. K-State Athletics. And now our overtime segment to close out this week's. Well, there's going to be a bonus. I'm going to do a bonus episode, a solo episode here later on this week. So we might keep giving you a nice little warning there. That's going to be out later this week. But to close out this weekly edition of the podcast, top 100 players. And I want to focus specifically on the top five. Well, in between here to the top five there. A lot of debate about Patrick Mahomes, Mr. Aiden. Patrick Mahomes, Super Bowl MVP, number four. I'm gonna run down. Hold on. I'm gonna run down the top 10. Lamar Jackson, number one in this year. Number one player in 2020. Russell Wilson. We already talked about him already. Number two, Aaron Donald. Number three, Patrick Mahomes. Number four. Everybody was pissed off. Seemed like at that. Michael Thomas, number five, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, DeAndre Hopkins, Stephon Gilmore, nine, Derrick Henry, 10. I don't like this list because my wide receiver is not in the top 10 for whatever reason. It's this stupid list, but okay, so Patrick Mahomes, Alex, number four, your Super Bowl MVP, number four, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, 1-2. How did you feel? What were your reactions actually to Patrick Mahomes at number four? He's basically the third quarterback on that list.
I don't know if you said, I don't know if you were like peeking on my Twitter last week or what when I was tweeting through the top 100. First off, I can't believe Julio Jones is not in the top 10. That is insane. That's ridiculous. That's blasphemy, Eddie. That's blasphemy.
Michael Thomas, you're overrated.
It's ridiculous. Julio Jones, best receiver in the NFL. I think he's better than Michael Thomas, in my opinion, but whatever. The Patrick Mahomes thing is just... It makes me wonder, Eddie, how much these athletes truly watch football, these NFL players, aside from the games that they play in. It really makes me wonder that because... Anyone who watches the NFL, there's not even a debate in the NFL right now about who the best player in the NFL is. There's not even a debate. Everyone. John Elway, he just came out this week and said Patrick Mahomes is probably the best player in the NFL. John Elway, you think he wants to say that? No. If John Elway is saying that, it's true, okay? Just going to say. I don't even know what to say, to be 100% honest, Eddie, because it's just so ridiculous. Now, if you're focusing just on last year, who was the best player in 2019? Yeah, Lamar was the best player in 2019, and yeah, Russ was probably second. You know, I'm not denying that, but it wasn't top 100 NFL players of 2019. It was top 100 players, period. There's no of 2019 in that. So, here's what I know, okay? Okay, here's what I know. I'm gonna break it down, Eddie. Lamar Jackson has had an amazing year. Phenomenal. He should have won the MVP. He absolutely should have won the MVP. He was correct. The correct winner, in my opinion, and he deserves all the credit in the world for the season that he had. But he's 0-2 in the playoffs.
Yep, I was just about to say.
in both of those games, you could make a really good argument that they lost because of him.
Yep.
Not because things went wrong somewhere else. It's not like the Patrick Mahomes loss to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game in 2019, because it would have been the very beginning of 2019. So it wouldn't have been like that game where Mahomes balled out, but the Chiefs lost because their defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. It wasn't like that with the Ravens. I mean, they scored. They lost, what was it, 12 to 10, 20, I can't even remember what the score was, but they scored 12 points. They scored 12 points in their loss to the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
And in the game against the Chargers the year before that, I mean, he was so bad that you can make an argument that he should have got pulled. I mean, he was so bad, people were calling that both have Flacco put back in the game. In that game. So, he was bad in those two games. And he's 0-2, so he has not showed up in those. He is also 0-2 against Patrick Mahomes. And the two of his worst games, once again, are against the Chiefs. He did not have a good game at Arrowhead last year. In fact, his completion percentage was below 50%. And the year before that, he threw probably, I don't know how many passes he threw, Eddie, but it wasn't a lot. It wasn't a lot. He was primarily running the ball in that game the year before, and they really did a slow kind of grinded out running attack. So it wasn't Lamar that was really beating you as much as it was those running backs and those types of things. And I hear a bunch of people say, well, Mahomes has a system built around him, and that's why he's so well. Well, the same thing for Lamar. He's got three tight ends built around him. He's got everything built around his game. You know, there's no such thing as a system quarterback, because every system is built around their quarterback. So that doesn't make sense to me when I hear the whole system quarterback thing. Because of course the Chiefs system is built around Mahomes. Of course the Ravens system is built around Lamar Jackson. And you can make an argument up in Seattle that Russell Wilson does not have a system built around his skill set, and I think that's probably hurting him in his NFL career, to be 100% honest, because I feel like that's really hurt him, some of the offensive decisions that were made there. But for the most part, the system is made around the QB. So apparently that amazing Lamar resume that I just reeled off to you is better than Mahomes in his first year throwing for over 5,000 yards, over 50 touchdowns, winning the MVP. His second year, he leads his team from three come from behind games in the playoffs, wins the Super Bowl, MVP, and he has now won four playoff games in the last 2 years. Because three last year, one the year before, so four playoff games the last 2 years that he's won. Lamar still yet to win a playoff game. And he's yet to win a game against Patrick Mahomes. So, that's just a joke, Eddie. That's just a joke. There's no way that Lamar is ahead of Mahomes. I don't know what was going on when those players were voting on that, but you can make a better argument for Russell Wilson than you could Lamar Jackson, because Russell Wilson has won a Super Bowl. And he's been in the league a long time, and he is a tremendous quarterback. I think Russell is from some people overrate him a little bit, but I actually think he's more underrated than overrated, believe it or not. But with that said, Russell Wilson says that Mahomes is better than him. So I don't even know what to say. Aaron Donald, I get it. He's totally a dominant defensive player. He's the best defensive player in the NFL, and you know what, if Mahomes would have come in at 2 and Aaron Donald came in at 1, I wouldn't be griping much. I'd be like, you know what, I don't agree with it. I mean, I would have voted Mahomes 1, but I get it. I mean, Aaron Donald's a beast. Okay, fine. I could live with it. It's the fact that there's 2 QBs ahead of him that is so ridiculous. Because he's always the best QB in the NFL. He's the best player in the NFL. And I don't know what else to say. I really don't. Except I was quite stunned when the news came down. I thought for sure he'd be number 1, and I was like, heck yeah, I'm gonna get to see a Chief be number 1 in the NFL top 100. Woohoo! And then when I saw for the second straight year at number 4, I couldn't believe it. And the first thing I did was take to Twitter, Eddie. My first reaction was to make sure that the Twitter world knew how I felt about it.
Yeah, so put a pin on that. So, yep, so top 10 there, Lamar Jackson. Yeah, I was definitely going to kind of review that, what you said. Oh, and 2 against the Chiefs there. So that's eye-popping right there a little bit. So, yeah, Patrick Mahomes at number 4 there for the Chiefs. So, folks, yeah. So, and then we talked about earlier in this podcast here tonight here as we close it out here that the NFL still playing on doing their full season while the Big 12 decides, well, we're not going to do the full season. We'll do only the 10 games, which includes the 1 non-com. Still yet to be determined here tonight here whether it's going to be North Dakota or Buffalo. That's going to be, we'll have to stay tuned for that here. If we know something, you know, we'll talk about here on the Purple Project podcast here. Like the breaking news, so we had to move things around once again. But again, this Purple Project podcast has been on fire with content. If you missed previous episodes of the Purple Project podcast, go to Apple Podcasts. We're on that. Please leave us a 5-star. That will help us out. Spread the word about this new, latest podcast edition for K-State. And we're on Spotify, Radio.com, Audio Boom. And earlier this evening, before jumping on this podcast, I posted the latest 3 episodes of the Pro Project podcast. So there's a lot of content. You guys, K-State Nation, jump on that here. We're in the month of August here. We still don't know when football is going to start. So we're getting K-State Nation, along with everybody else, starting to get a little anxious here about football season. Alex, you got last words before we wrap this thing up?
You know what, Eddie? People might have heard a lot of anger come from my voice today. in this episode about the college football. Ultimately, I am just happy that we're close, and I just hope that we can see a college football season, and we can watch K-State football in the fall. And we can get through it healthy and happy. And you know what? If we can get through a 10-game season and we can watch K-State for 10 games, do their thing, I'm not going to complain.
Right, yeah.
You know, ultimately, while we're sitting here frustrated about the way that this is handled, I've always been very vocal about, while I may not agree how something's handled, in a sport, I may not agree with the way the union's handling it, or the owners are handling it, or how the commissioners are handling it, or whoever it might be. I will never let it get in the way of my love for sports, my love for my teams. And it's the same thing here. I don't agree with the way that the Big 12 handled the situation, but you know what? I'm happy that there's going to be football, and I'm excited for K-State football. And hopefully we can get through the season, and hopefully the Big 12 does have some good contingency plans for every different scenario, and we can get back to talking about what we want to talk about, which is what K-State's doing on the field, instead of, you know, what's their schedule going to look like. We can go out and we can you know, break down Skyler's performance against West Virginia, or break down Jarcadia Wright's breakout game against Texas Tech, or K-State running for 400 yards on KU, or whatever it might be. So that's the ultimate goal. Well, you know, while we sit here, we talk about all of this scheduling and the, you know, the money and the financials and all those types of deals, and we may not agree on how things are handled. Ultimately, football is going to be here, and we should be grateful for that.
and we're ready for it. I'm excited for it. You know, despite the frustration of Big 12, I'm excited. I'm excited the football's right around the corner. I can't wait to be sitting on my couch on a Saturday afternoon and watching K-State take the field and hopefully win a lot of football games.
Hopefully that's the plan here. Again, we don't know the exact start of college football, the Big 12. Now we finally get an answer that they were going to be playing 10 games, so we'll have every game covered here on the Pro Project Podcast. Yeah, man, but some football is better than no football. Let's just hope that, you know, everything is can at least trend in that direction, and we can find at least, at the very least, as we talked about it so far this summer, a football season. That was everyone's hoping, at least right now, folks. So that will be nice. So K-State football, we don't know the exact time, but it's coming. It's coming soon. You guys stay safe out there in K-State Nation. If you're an alum outside of Kansas, y'all stay safe, stay healthy. Alex, we'll do this again next week, sir.
I look forward to it, man. I look forward to it.
Awesome. Folks, that's a wrap for another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, folks. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, thank you so much. This will be out as usual time tomorrow. And look out for a bonus episode coming from me later on this week. But for right now, the Purple Project Podcast is closed, folks. Bring on the cats, folks. We're out. Thanks for listening to the Purple Project Podcast. We'll talk to you next time.
Edition of the Purple Project Podcast.